Blog Talk Radio.
Everywhere the band is your name. And when we caught up with him later on that tour, I was like, "Oh, we're playing with Newstead, cool, I'll see Jason." You could totally see in his face that he was like not in Metallica anymore and used to being catered to and this and that, and him, you could just see in his face like, "I have to hang out in this tent with these freaks though." I don't know, I was like, lighten up, man. Like, I don't know, I tell people like he used to be in Coca-Cola and now he's in Tab. And he doesn't like that. You know,
he's even said that in interviews how, like, that whole touring process with the solo band was such a weird wake-up call because...
I didn't read any of that. I'm sure it was because I saw those shows, and let me tell you, I don't think he was prepared for that at all.
He said he lost a lot of money. I'm sure he probably, like, budgeted it out like a Metallica tour, you know, like...
That or, like, he had the 90s mentality still. Of like, oh, man, yeah, $80,000 for a bus. Yeah, we're going to need that.
Like, I think it's totally that. That's probably why, because when you saw him, he was tabulating in his mind how many tens of thousands
probably.
Of dollars he's losing by the minute.
Probably. You know what, though? The first time we met him, it was so fun. We played a show. It was when The Sword was on tour with Caius Lives, that reunion of sorts. Do you remember that? It was basically Caius, but without Homie. Whenever we stopped through San Francisco, Newstead's band, like his little like pub band, they were called Papa Wheelie.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
They opened the show and it was so fun. I had a great time and he was super nice. So I was like, whenever like Newstead came out, it was like, it wasn't this fun vibe. It was like super serious and I don't know. I don't think the world was ready for that yet, or I don't know if it ever will be. But hey, whatever. Look who's talking. Right.
Darren, how you doing?
Darren, press the right knob in so that it clicks, because you have a light on that the rest of us don't have on. Like where the headphone and mic thing is?
It's the left knob. It's not the right knob. If you're looking at it,
the right knob is for the headphones.
Yeah.
No.
Not by the microphone.
Hold on, let's see.
Just curious too. Is this like a radio thing? Should I worry about F-bombs or whatever?
No,
not that I'm a profane individual. Sometimes I need to turn that switch on to make sure I don't.
Please,
you know. Hey, guy. Look at you. Is the video being utilized? Should I?
We are going to use the video. Oh, okay. I figured out how to hear myself, guys.
Take that long. I'll just hold the phone. It's fine. I do have a little camera stand, but it's not a big deal.
Rob, turn your mic up a little bit.
Turn it up
lower
even more
than everybody else.
Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay.
So what are we doing? We ready? Or what's going on?
Darren, okay, yes,
the,
I'm ready.
Old mic going? Darren,
yes. Is it working? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Wait, which mic are you talking about? The old
I'm just going to have this here for uniformity purposes, so it doesn't look weird. I'm going to still talk into my old mic.
Okay.
All right, yeah, and then we'll figure it out later in the week.
Hmm?
Yeah, we roll. All right.
Showbiz.
Let me just test the audio here.
Go! This is your announcer, Chuck Landington.
You can hear it.
Well.
All right.
hold on, Kyle.
Wait, we're going live. We're going live now.
Been doing this show 12 years.
I feel like this is the part, like we're waiting for the breakdown. It's like, okay, ready?
That's it.
Go!
It's a huge tease.
Rob, did you call in to Block Talk?
Yeah. Do you want to check? All right, here we go. Ready to go. Streaming in like 2 seconds, okay? Okay?
Hang a little. I'm going to turn it down a smidge.
Okay, here we go.
This is your announcer, Chuck Landington, welcoming you to the Metal Injection Livecast. 250,000 COVID cases have been linked to the Sturgis biker rally.
No.
What a disaster.
Rob, no.
The news is reporting that we haven't seen a super spreader
wrong
event.
One.
Try this again. Let's
bum out.
Again. Go!
This is your announcer, Chuck Landington, welcoming you to the Metal Injection Livecast. The lead singers of Godsmack and Staind just announced a co-headlining solo tour. Thanks, I've been looking for the perfect gift for your uncle, who believes in the QAnon Hollywood cabal theory and hasn't caught coronavirus yet. The Metal Injection Livecast starts now.
Now! Welcome to the Metal Injection Livecast. The right promo has been played, and we are here, and you are here. Thank you so much for joining us on another great edition. We have a very special guest sitting with myself, Darren, Sid, and Noah. We have the flowing locks of Kyle Schutt of the Sword on the screen with us.
Hey, everybody.
Kyle, joining us from Austin.
Oh, good. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you. It's a pleasure to be here. And, Kyle, you are calling us from Austin. I love having a guest at the top of the show here on the Metal Injection Livecast. And by the way, you can speak to Kyle, as I hit my mic here. You could speak to Kyle anytime you want while he's on the show by giving us a ring, 213-WIDE-NUT. That's 213-943-3688. And Kyle,
I'll spill the beans, man. I'll talk about it all.
You'll talk about it all. Right before we went on air, you were telling us about the unique location you are currently in. Now you're in your truck, but like, what's going on there? Tell us.
I do a lot of truck talking these days. I live in a 30-foot Airstream travel trailer, and so I also have two lovely children. So I thought I'd spare everybody the crying and the yelling and the hitting and stuff. So not that I do the hitting. They do the hitting on me, but yeah.
Wait, are they hitting you? Are they hitting each other? Can
they
we
hit know? Anything? The drums, the guitar, anything I do, they're gonna
oh,
hit it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I've got a 4-month-old son and a 3.5-year-old daughter, and yeah, we have a lot of fun. We do. But it, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Well, you live in a trailer, right? Or what's the
Airstream?
Proper term? Airstream. I don't wanna.
You can't offend me. I have no ego. It's fine. You can call it whatever you want.
But I love that because that means you can pick up and go wherever the hell you want.
Anywhere I want. If I'm just tired of this town, I just load the trailer up. Let's go and go anywhere I want. I haven't in a while because of obvious reasons. But yeah, it's super fun. I spent like, you know, 25 years getting in and out of vans, planes, trains, boats, whatever, you know. And so just traveling like. It feels at home to me whenever my body is moving at like 80 miles an hour down the highway. I'm just like, yeah, I'm alive, you know. And so it's it made sense for me to do it with the kids because Austin, I don't know, this is pre-COVID stuff I'm talking about here, but Austin was just blown up. It never experienced like the housing crisis that the rest of the nation did. And you could get a dump of a house here for like $400,000. That still needed like $80,000 worth of work on it and stuff like that. I don't know, especially as an artist friendly town, it just got priced out. All the artists got priced out, and it just, you know, boo hoo and all. But a lot of whenever you play music for a living, if you know you get on tours and things like that, and you're on TV or whatever, people think that you're like loaded. But no, I mean, nobody that plays music for a living is rich. Even if you do get a big fat payday. It's just a matter of time before that money's gone and you're going to have to figure out the next step and everything. So it's, you know, being an artist full time these days is, it's a real juggling act. You can't just play guitar anymore. You have to know how to play guitar and be an actor and be a good business person. And it's a whole, so yeah. And I thought, you know, instead of wasting all this money on a house in a city that I can't afford to live in and all this stuff, I was like, why not just buy a brand new Airstream and a truck for like $100,000?
My God, done. Genius.
I'm still paying it off. I don't own it by any means. But it was way cheaper than buying a house. And also, I can go to Durango, Colorado if I want to and smoke all the weed there. Or I can go to Portland, Oregon and smoke all the weed there. Or I can go to Portland, Maine and smoke all the weed there. And it's a lot of fun. It feels right to me. So that's why I do it. Some people look at me like I'm crazy, but
we don't think you're crazy.
Maybe I am. I don't know. Thank you.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, you touched on a lot of things I wanted to talk about. And first of all, let's talk about Austin. One thing we talk about here on the Metal Injection Livecast, we all live in Brooklyn, New York, and we long for the old New York. It's kind of a similar situation that you're saying, where, like, you know, housing is completely unaffordable. And it's like, it's the same thing with us. Like, you know, you can get a dump, but like the price is actually like twice as much here in New York. But
dude, like, I know people in Brooklyn that are moving to Manhattan because it's cheaper now.
Yes,
it's crazy.
I
know my first
nuts.
Person today who's doing that. He's a stand-up comedian.
So, but that's why I wanted to ask, like, what was, like, I never quite really experienced the old Austin. My experiences of Austin are limited mostly to South by Southwest, which I know is like a poor representation of what Austin
really
is. Rob
is part of the problem.
I stopped going. I wanted to know, like, what was Austin like before it sold out?
Okay. I've got actually a lot to say about this, because when I moved to Austin in the year 2000,
are you from Texas originally, or
I was born in San Antonio. And then I was about 8 or 9, my family moved out to Midland, Odessa area. The Friday Night Lights and all that kind of stuff is out there. And, it's a pretty miserable place, to grow up and try to play music, especially if you're into punk rock and things like that. There's just not a lot going on. And I didn't have enough money to move to LA or New York whenever I wanted to leave home to play music. So Austin's the city you go to whenever, you know, that you just want to play music for a living and you live in Texas. And when I got here in 2000, people had that mentality already of like, it's over. It's not, it used to be way cooler in the 90s. And then like, eventually after I got to know a whole lot of people that had been here forever, they're like, people have been saying that since the 60s. In the 60s, like, hey, it's over. 70s, it's over. Used to be cool. 80s, used to be cool. Now, it's always been just a group of people just bagging on the new wave of people that come in. Austin's a lot like, I guess it's a lot like Brooklyn. I think Austin and Brooklyn have an exchange program going on. Where, like,
yeah, that's
I spent a year in Brooklyn. I had a great time. I was living off of Fulton down in the Clinton Hill area. And I had a great time.
Nice.
But it's certainly different than it used to be. And Austin, so back when I first moved here, there was about 500,000 people that lived in Austin. Now it's about 2.5 million. Mm-hmm. So it is crazy. A lot of the tech companies that moved here drove the prices of the houses just up through the roof, out of control. You know, it turned into, it used to be a music town. It really did. You know, 7 nights a week there, even on a Monday night, there was 100 shows going on. On a Saturday night, there was 1,000 shows. It was just crazy. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing music. And it kind of turned into a food town. It just, like, you know, people, they stopped wanting to hang out at crappy dive bars, like stuff the cigarette smoke. And so they wanted to, like, go out and have a nice evening on the patio and enjoy like a very expensive dinner and have their elbow room and stuff. I don't know. It just became a lot more of like a creature comfort kind of town rather than a just, you know, do anything to go to a show kind of town. And South By was, you know, a lot of people bag on it, but The Sword was one of those bands that got a lot out of it. The idea of South by Southwest was to, it was basically a festival invented by a bunch of journalists who had nothing to write about during spring break. And so they created their own festival to bring, you know, hundreds and hundreds of unsigned bands to Austin to get them some coverage and just hopefully get them a record deal or something. And just like anything else, it eventually just gets to the point where Doritos is running the show, and there it's just like, you know, I remember the first year that it felt like it wasn't South by anymore. I think it was 2003 or 2004 maybe. I was looking at the lineup of bands playing, and I used to keep up with like all the underground bands in the country and stuff like that, and I would get really excited when, you know, like Wolf Mother played and like nobody knew who they were. They had one EP out that was like a thing, and it was just like, oh cool, Wolf Mother's playing. Or when Big Business first came out, it was like, I was a huge Carp fan and everything. And it's like, you know, you didn't really know who Big Business was or whatever. But I remember back in, I think it was 2004, I was reading the lineup and the Beastie Boys were playing. I was like, what the hell are Beastie Boys playing South by Southwest for? I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Beastie Boys. They're probably the coolest dudes that ever played a show. But, you know, this isn't your festival, man. Like, what are you doing? And then it just eventually, I think Lady Gaga like played a show downtown where she like, you know, made herself throw up on her drummer and stuff. And then like, it was just, it got to the point where it was just like, you couldn't, like, if you were an unsigned band going to the South by Southwest, was a total waste of your time and money. And it was sad because it was such a cool festival at heart, but it eventually like kind of came around. I remember the last year or two, it sort of felt like there weren't as many people in town. And it was, I remember there was a sticker around town that was that South by Southwest. I thought it was funny, but it was a huge part of getting Austin on the map and turning it into one of those kind of places where it's just sort of like a tourist stop, where it seems like I couldn't go anywhere in the world without people saying, "Oh, you're from Austin. Oh, I love Austin. I went there for blah, blah, blah," or whatever. It just sort of, yeah, it just became, I don't know, yeah, like a very similar story to a city of the world, not really a city of Texas, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of, I feel like also that's kind of what happened with the metal stuff, is like the first 2 years I would go there, like, whoa, this band's playing. Like, what? Like, ah, there's like 30 bands, yeah, 30 shows. And then by the last year, it was like, there's one show a day and these bands play Brooklyn, yeah, every week. I don't have to go to Austin to do it. So it kind of it ruined it for me. But I mean, now I'm totally cool with it.
Looking forward to this year's, but you know, it obviously that was the first thing to get canceled. That was when it was a wake up call to be like, oh, I think this COVID thing might be a thing. You know, like they canceled South by.
Oh, yeah,
you know how much money they're gonna lose? So yeah.
I remember, and like people were giving South by shit, like they were calling them pussies, basically, like, "Oh, come on, relax. This is," but they really did have the foresight, because ultimately it would have been canceled anyway, because when it was happening is when the entire shutdown happened.
Yep.
Let's talk about.
Yeah,
I do want to also mention that you said that, you know, you can't just be a guitarist anymore. You got to do other things, and you are an auteur. You're writing a book.
And an auteur.
I'm going to attempt to be. I've got I'm an idea man, and I've got this, you know, board of ideas that I always have. And anytime I get an idea, I put it on the board, and then when it comes time to cook up a project or kind of see what's next, I go to the board and I look at all my ideas, and I sort of just put all my eggs in that basket. And I came up with the idea to write a book called Written in Stone. It was funny. It made me laugh. Usually when I laugh, I know there's something behind the idea, and I like to go with it. I'm a people person. I really like making people laugh and interact with them and just kind of brighten people's moods and stuff. I get just as depressed and stressed out as the next person, but I try not to make that the focus of my image, you know, and I try to be a bright light for people. And I don't know, just with all this kind of coming down and everything, I had planned to write the book much later in life. I felt like once I had like a full huge story to tell, but I mean, with the way things are going these days, I feel like I have a lot to say. What kind of book is it going to be? Okay. So I chose Kickstarter to do this,
yep,
because a book is an entirely different thing than writing an album or whatever. And I didn't want to take the year or more even of investing myself in that thing if nobody wanted to read it. I mean, like reading books is kind of, I think it's sexy, but not a lot of people feel that way. Not a lot of people like to read all the time. So like I said, I didn't want to like invest all this time in this thing if only like 50 people wanted to read it. You know, I love you 50 people, don't get me wrong, but it's, you know, it's a lot of work, and I don't like to half-ass things. Once I get a vision, I really won't compromise on until I see that fully fleshed out. So I wanted to write a memoir, but I'm also like the least famous person to ever probably try to write a book like that. It's not like I have these stories where I was like, I woke up in a hotel room, it's like 13 groupies and like pile of blow, and I just knew I had to get my life together. You know, it's rock and roll's not like that anymore. So I really wanted to take the rock and roll memoir genre and just turn it upside down and almost make like a how-to guide or like an inspirational kind of like book about just my story and everything like that, and just my point of view on the music industry, and just kind of like make it like a dissection of what it means to play music for a living, to where there's going to be an entire chapter about, you know, the band, like those people, the scene, and then another chapter about the studio, the different ways you can go about making an album. I have a chapter about called We Are the Road Crew, where I interview all the crew members from our past and just see their point of view on taking care of a ding dong like me. Explore what it means to act like an idiot rock star and like what people expect of you, and just say really like your number one enemy as a musician is people's expectations. And so I just want to explore all these things and put it together in a really cool, like illustrated, photo laden kind of just mixed media almost book project. So it's not going to be you know, A to Z, just the story of my life. I don't have that big an ego. I don't feel like I need people to know all about me, but I do feel like I have a lot to say and a lot of really interesting perspective. And also I'm not going to write it if there's not enough people on board. So that's, I'm in the middle of like running a hilarious kind of like book meme parody campaign. I like to have fun. I really love promo and I really love like hyping stuff up and getting people on board and entertaining the masses. And even if you don't want to kick in money, it's still a lot of fun just to watch the promo stuff roll by every day. So I'm no fool. You know, I know times are tough and they may get tougher still. But I'm asking for a fair amount of money because again, like I'm not getting rich off this or anything. I have a vision for a book that I want to create, and I can only do it for a certain amount of money because it's just printing books costs a lot. You know, it's just like pressing records or anything like that. So nothing's for free, unfortunately. But I think if we rally, we get enough people together, we can make this really awesome book and turn it into something bigger than just my story.
Do you have anyone who's like kind of holding your hand through it? Or like anyone that's helping you through
no,
it?
No, I don't.
You're going into like all on your own?
I am. I do have people that have offered their services to help me through it and everything. I'm friends with a lot of actual real deal writers. I'm an utter hack, I promise. But I've read 1,000 books. So I could probably write one. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I know what sucks. I know what doesn't. And I have confidence in my abilities to be able to put together this thing without it just being a total sleeping pill. It's not going to be some 1,000-page, you know, book or whatever. I just want to, like, have something really fun. I love when some of my favorite artists and things like that have kind of taken a dip into the journalism route, like Lenny Bruce, his book How to Make Friends and Influence People is one of my favorites. You know, he's a stand-up guy, but his book is super inspiring. And like I said, like your average rock and roll memoir, like it's just, it kind of gets to be old after a while. So like it's not going to be, like I said, like the Ace Frehley book or the Al Jorgensen book. Have you read that, the Ministry one? That one's crazy. Like, you're never going to top those stories. So I don't even, I'm not treating it like a contest. Like, look at the stuff I did. Like, no, I mean, I did some crazy things. Don't get me wrong. And I will talk about them all. But people have so many questions. People ask me lots of questions all the time. And I just want to put all the answers in this one book. So if somebody asks me something, I can say, hey, read this. It's all there.
Well, I'm sure this is the question that people have asked you is, which artist who has smoked you up had the best weed? Who has the best weed in rock?
Kirk Hammett.
Oh, shit.
He had this shit called Romulan one time that was probably the best weed I ever smoked. Who else had real good weed? Clutch, but that goes without saying. Those guys are made out of weed. Yeah, but they've always got some bomb weed. You know what? They put us in touch with Willie Nelson's weed dealer in Nashville one time, and we bought an ounce of that Willie weed. Not his brand, Willie's Reserve or whatever, but this was like the stuff that Willie would buy whenever he would roll through Nashville. Oh. Wow, man, that was incredible. You know, it wasn't a famous person that we got it from, but we got a bag of weed one time called God's Gift. And I don't know if you smoked this strain before, but it is the stinkiest weed ever. When we were on tour with Metallica, they wouldn't, they didn't care what we did, really, but like they would usually put our dressing room far away from theirs so that we could just do whatever we wanted, smoke weed, whatever. They wouldn't bother us nowhere. But there was one, if it ever was a venue where our dressing rooms were like wall to wall attached to each other, they would just ask us not to smoke weed in our dressing room just so that like the smell didn't get in their room and everything and all that stuff. And we were totally respectful of that, you know, it's no bones about it. But we just had this weed. We weren't even smoking it. We had this bag of God's Gift hanging out backstage. We're breaking it up to take all the seeds out and everything. Stems, I mean, no seeds in this weed. But they came, they like knocked on our door and they're like, hey guys, you know you can't smoke in here. What are you doing? And we're like, we're not even smoking it. We're just breaking it up. And they looked at the weed and they were like, wow. Anyway, would you mind taking that outside? We're like, yeah, sorry. That was some good ass weed. That was really good.
Was there anyone you wanted to blow up that gave you shitty weed? There would be someone famous that we know? If you don't want to answer, that's okay.
No, nobody had bad weed. There was, you know, you can get good weed anywhere. I've learned that you can get really good weed anywhere in the world, but you can also get really bad weed. It just depends on who you know and who you came across at the time and everything. And for whatever reason, in the UK, we just got burned time and time again with, like, the wettest, nastiest, like, just clipped off the plant, uncured, disgusting, like, can't even get you high weed. And that was always such a bummer because it's like when you're a total stoner and you're, like, touring the world and everything, you need weed. And when you, like, cross a different border every day, you know, it's just you're on this constant, like, hunt for fucking weed. And it makes you feel like a goddamn heroin addict. And you're like, it's just a plant. I just need to smoke a plant. Okay. Like, you know, it's not a big deal. Just can somebody please give me weed?
Yeah, who am I harming? Like, this is such a minor drug. And here I am having this anxiety attack trying to acquire some.
I know. But we were in, like, Germany, you know, playing somewhere. And they were like, yeah, I asked them, they're like, oh, stoner rock band is here. This is great. I was like, yeah, can you get us some weed, please? They're like, weed? Do you know it's illegal here? I was like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. That's why I'm asking you to go get me some. Like, you're booking stoner rock bands. You think we don't need weed, man? Oh, yeah. It's like,
well, if you're in Germany.
Look at the poster. It says stoner metal right there. Yeah. And, you know, it's just like, yeah.
When I was in Berlin, I found on Reddit, they were like, go to this park and just walk.
Berlin's
in.
Different. You go to the park, you walk around, you find the guys, they just sell you weed. It's great.
You know,
I'm serious. Like, I'm dead serious.
It was
serious.
The craziest experience I ever had because it's like, I go into this park and they're like, just keep walking, you'll see them. And I was just like, how am I ever going to know who the fuck is a drug dealer?
It's groups of them. It's just like, you know, you find two guys and you kind of like wave at them and they're like, yeah, come here. And then, they take you to their other guy, and they kind of look out while you buy some weed, and it's pretty decent weed, honestly.
Yeah, it was fine.
I was impressed, yeah.
I mean, especially, like, for the shady way I acquired it, I was just very impressed. But I wanted to ask, so, like, what, you know, obviously, you're an expert at picking up while traveling. Like, what are some things you could do and things you should avoid doing? Because I've definitely, when I was in the UK, I ran into a similar problem and I got completely ripped off where it was like those tiny little mini broccolis. Like,
you get the guys on the street that are like, smoke skunk, and you know, don't buy weed from them.
Yeah,
they won't sell you weed. I'm the kind of guy, I don't know, if you drop me anywhere in the world, by the end of the day, I'll probably have a best friend and a couch to sleep on. So I don't have a problem approaching people, you know, and kind of reading the room and just probably figuring out who's got weed, who doesn't. One thing you shouldn't do is ask the guy that with dreadlocks if he has weed. They get really offended because they get asked all the time if they have weed. Most of the time, like, the dudes with dreadlocks don't smoke in Europe. It's like, well, then what? I don't the disconnect here. But I wish more promoters, this is all pre-COVID. I know things are fucked right now. But, like, this, it's like back in those days, it was like, if you're a promoter that isn't, like, works at an independent venue and you book all kinds of different acts and everything like that, you have to know a drug dealer or multiple drug dealers. I was in Las Vegas one time playing, I can't remember what club, but one of the production assistant guys, I was like, hey man, can you give me some weed? You know, and do you know anybody? I can call him or whatever, but just, do you know anybody? And he was like, man, people ask me that every day. And I said, well, you should like keep a bunch of 40 bags in your backpack and you probably make like $200 a day, like, you know, selling weed at the shows that you already work at. You could see that he was like, whoa. I was like, I don't mean to encourage you to become a drug dealer, but I mean, come on, dude. Like, it's right there in front of you, man. He was like, yeah, I don't know. So, like, I don't like to advocate drug use, but I do like drugs, and so it's like whenever you want to do them, it's, you just kind of have to deal with some really sketchy situations sometimes. I wish you did. I wish drugs were just legal. If you just, I mean, like I said, like, I don't like to advocate drug use, but if you want to shoot up heroin till you die, shoot up heroin until you die. I don't care. You know what I mean? It's your choice.
Shouldn't they make like a safe place for people to go to, you know, do that so they don't disrupt other people who don't want to shoot heroin and don't want to?
I don't know, man. Whatever, dude. There's so many problems with this society.
I'm with you. Well, lightning up the moon, I do want to also mention Doom Side of the Moon. It's your Floyd cover project. I am a huge Pink Floyd fan. The best concert I ever saw was Roger Waters at Yankee Stadium doing The Wall, which was like life-changing.
I bet that was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I bet.
And like,
were you at the Doomside show in Brooklyn?
No, I did not. I was not able to catch the Doomside show, unfortunately.
Oh, you missed it. It was great.
But I do love
the
album.
It was super fun. Thank you.
And I wanted to say, like, I really feel like it took a lot of balls to do that, because I feel like Pink Floyd is such a like worshipped band in general.
Yeah.
And like people don't really cover Pink Floyd too much, or if they do, it's like a certain song, you know, like it's the obvious songs, but you like really,
it's usually it's like a straight cover usually when they do it.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's what I was saying. Like you went in and you like rearranged it. You like did shit to it. And like, you know, I could see some people going like, how dare you?
But it's bound to be scrutinized either way, no matter what you do.
And I went in knowing that full well, because number one, I wanted to take the music, and the moniker Doom Side of the Moon was kind of a play on the Easy Star All Stars Dub Side of the Moon that they did, like the reggae version of it.
Which
that's really
awesome.
Really good.
I love that.
And I was like, I'm gonna do the Doom version of it. This would be great. And but I didn't want to go full Doom, because I'm sure everyone out there is aware. You know, Doom is it gets applied to a lot of much anything these days. Any kind of heavy music is like Doom, but Doom itself is really like a very specific sub-genre of music that is like very abrasive, and like it, when done correctly, it's wonderful. Like a band like Burning Witch, Crippled Lucifer, that's a perfect example of just like phenomenal Doom music. And like, you can't go that far down the Doom road with Pink Floyd. You just can't. So I knew full on, I was like, am I going full Doom or am I just gonna do it? So my idea behind it was just kind of like taking those songs by those four dudes and just saying like, what if Black Sabbath was the band that played this album instead of Pink Floyd? And so that was kind of like where I started, because like Roger's bass lines are usually the riff in the song, and so I took the bass parts and made those the guitar parts, and then David Gilmour's parts is usually like the icing on the cake instead of like being like a full on guitar riff thing. So I kind of like took those parts and maybe put them on the saxophone. But I definitely wanted to have a sax in the band, just because there's so much saxophone on those old recordings anyway. And it was just that. It was just like kind of – it was my first full-on production endeavor, like where I was the producer. So it was definitely me in the studio, like cutting up the arrangements, like making it all – telling the band what to do, like this and that and everything, putting it all together. And when you're tackling a record like that, it's weird, because like everybody in the planet has a Dark Side of the Moon story, you know? And so when you're messing with people's emotions like that, you really have to take the time and attention to detail to do it in a way that's going to make them happy instead of just immediately like, bah! So I was really happy with the final product. And I knew that the way I presented it was like, I released it on the 50th anniversary of The Piper at the Gates of Dawn coming out. And I threw a whole laser show with it, which, you know, if you're going to play Pink Floyd songs, you better throw a light show with it. So the band dressed up all in white with all white instruments, so that the projections made the whole stage look like it was this big swimming psychedelic thing. It was a phenomenal show, but it was a total exercise in rock and roll production. I mean, it was like a full on Broadway show. I couldn't do it with any less than 15 people. It cost a lot of money. It did well at first, but then I booked the tour and then I totally lost my ass on that one. So, but it's fine. Because people are like, how come you don't do more Doom Side of the Moon? I was like, you got 15 grand? I don't, man. Like, it's phenomenally expensive to buy a laser.
Right,
for
and
a
then
day.
Pay people.
So,
for
you know,
market.
Yeah, like I said, exactly. And like I said, I won't compromise on my vision. I'm not going to do anything half-assed. So I'm not just going to set up with a little rainbow machine and just play Pink Floyd songs. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it big. And if sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I lost a lot of money on that deal, but I don't know. If you're gonna do something and you're gonna do it right, do it big, do it huge. And then if you fail, just fail so big that it looks like a success. That's really
good advice.
Inspiring.
People,
you know?
I think it's really cool that like you have these visions and you kind of just execute them. That's how this podcast started. That's how Metal Injection as a whole started. It's just like, oh, it'd be cool to do this. All right, let's do it. Let's really do it, you know?
Yeah, I would hate to make it all the way to the end of my life and like have this like huge list of ideas that never got realized, you know? And so that's kind of what keeps me going. And again, like I said earlier, I want to be this like, you know, just a person that people can look to be like, wow, he really did that. Like, I came from nothing. I don't have any money. I don't have, you know, I grew up in a really tiny West town and just wanted to take over the world with my rock and roll. And I wish more people weren't so afraid to do that crazy thing they always wanted to do. And I like to be an example of that. Be like, see, you can do it. You might not make any money. In fact, you might lose a lot of money and everything. But at the end of it all, you'll have that experience and no one will ever be able to take that from you.
final question as we wind down. I do want to ask, what is your favorite Pink Floyd record and what is your go-to Pink Floyd record? Because those could be two different.
Yeah. I think my favorite one is Wish You Were Here. I don't know. It's a little darker in tone than Dark Side of the Moon. Dark Side of the Moon really isn't that like dark or heavy of a record necessarily. In fact, it was very difficult to make it heavy. The follow-up Encore EP that I did, it's way easier to take some of those later Pink Floyd songs that are already kind of heavy and to make them way heavier. So I had a lot of fun with that. But my go-to is probably Animals. I don't know. For whatever reason, that one just, it sits easier on my ears, even though the songs are really long. For whatever reason, bookending Wish You Were Here with Shine On You Crazy Diamond. I find my mind wandering. I don't like that I do. And I think those songs are genius and I love the whole flow of the whole album and everything, but that's why I do think it is the best one. But I find myself mentally trailing off whenever I listen to that one. But for whatever reason, when I put Animals on, it's just beginning to end straight fire. I love it.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for hanging out with us, dropping some knowledge bombs. And
what's the Kickstarter URL so people could go donate?
It is kickstarter.com/projects/Kyle Shutt/written-in-stoned. I can send you a link if you want to put it in the show notes or anything.
Well,
if you go to my Instagram page, it's just at Kyle Shutt. I've got a link to it in my little profile there, so you can find it that way. It's sure to be a good time. Put some weight on your bookshelf.
Yeah, we'll link to it in the show description. You could search Metal Injection for the story about the Kickstarter. Thank you so much, Kyle. And
of course, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. Call me anytime. I'm happy to gab about stuff because I certainly have way too many tour stories.
Next time we want a tour of the Airstream,
yeah.
Or at least I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah. Sure.
Right on. All right, Kyle. Have a good one.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
All right. That is Kyle. We're gonna. Really fun guy.
I love the advice he gave at the end.
Measurable conversation.
Can you hear me?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Oh.
Before we go on, I want to quickly mention Michigan-based crossover Death Thrashers Plague Years unveiled their official video for Incantation this Friday. And the band's punishing album, Circle of Darkness, is set for release September 18th, which is this Friday. The video is out now. I've completely botched this. But the video is out now. And
the only thing that's punishing is you doing this live read.
But Plague Ears is an excellent band.
You're a plague to our ears, Rob.
I'm the plague to your ears. Plague Ears is no plague to anybody's ears. They're a pleasure to your ears. And their new album, Circle of Darkness, is out this Friday, September 18th, via E1, Entertainment One Music. Some fine people at E1, and Plague Ears is one to check out. So check it out. Plague Ears, Circle of Darkness from Michigan, and check out their new music video for Incantation.
I have a small confession that I might want to make, and I might regret making it.
Should I get the After Dark music ready?
It depends.
Oh, no.
So at one point during that interview, I had to mute my microphone to fart.
Oh, that's fine. Microphone, you should have let it go. Test how good these new mics are.
No, it wasn't one of those kind of loud ones. But I just wonder if you can like see it on my face. You can tell when I did it.
But wait, if it wasn't a loud one, why did you need to mute the mic?
Well, I didn't know what would come out.
I guess.
You can't predict.
That's the fun.
The only time I could predict is if I like pull it up. If I pull my cheeks apart, then I know it's going to be silent.
I feel that's only on your OnlyFans page, though.
Yeah.
I feel like every time we have a guest, someone should fart so then we could have the listeners try to figure out who it was. That was so good that one time.
Yeah.
Step back.
By the way, Darren, I want to compliment you on your excellent T-shirt.
Oh, thank you.
For our audio listeners, it is the Anthrax logo, but it spells out Antifa.
Thank you, Rob.
So, you know, the people... responsible for Joe Biden's nomination for the president.
I think
is that available on our merch page, Rob? Is that one of your designs?
Should be.
No.
I think I did wear this on a Patreon episode once, but now it's for the audience at large.
You've worn it a couple of times.
Speaking of our merch page, though, I do want to mention that all this week, this Wednesday, September 16th through, I think, Friday, the 18th or Saturday, if you're listening and you have been wanting to pick up a piece of Metal Injection Livecast swag, we're going to have a sale in our merch store on all of our items, our T-shirts, our masks, stickers, any item that you want is going to be on sale. Shirts are going to be $13. Masks are, I believe, $8 and $12. I recommend getting the $12 mask. It's worth the investment for sure. They're much more comfortable masks. And you can get one of these bad boys.
Rao has an over-it mask that he's putting on his face, which we are over as well.
Yeah, do the rest of the show with the mask on.
So you can get those at metalinjection.net/livecastmerch.
And we should let people know it's our Rosh Hashanah sale.
We could do that. And, of course, there is our Patreon if you want a bonus epi or two or five or 12. It's been 1 year of our Patreon. You can get bonus episodes at patreon.com/metalinjectionlivecast for as low as $5 a month. This month's bonus episode, we watched Until the Light Takes Us. You can watch it along with us. You can watch us suffering through Until the Light Takes Us, which is a black metal documentary with Varg from Brutzum, Fenrez, and Frost. And it was a fun watch. And also past episodes include, we did like a huge roast of Mike Francesi. We did a Motley Crue watch along, Suburban Commando, which is a Hulk Hogan movie. Right, that was the one? Fuck, I always get it wrong.
Oh,
no,
it's
Santa
with
Muscles.
What's wrong with you?
They're all the same.
I got to defend Rob on this one. All his movies blend together for me.
Yeah. So patreon.com/metalinjectionlivecast.
Yes, Rosh Hashanah out and subscribe to our Patreon. Rosh Hashanah extravaganza.
Rosh Hashanah, by the way, is the Jewish New Year, and for some reason it's always in September, because, you know, why does Jesus get to determine the calendar?
I mean, they were around first, let's be fair, a 5,700 year old calendar.
Yeah, I always forget what the year is. And then, of course, after Rosh Hashanah is the high holiday Yom Kippur.
Yes.
You going to list all the Jewish holidays in order now?
No,
is that the rest of the episode?
Next up, Tishah.
There's a bunch, right? There's then, like, is Sukkot now, or
Sukkot
is like
Sukkot is in the end of October.
In October.
Yeah, they all line up, and then there's Chanukah.
Sukkot is where you build a little hut outside your house, and for some reason your dumbass has to go outside and eat inside the little hut. You can't eat inside your real house. So they have all these companies in Brooklyn that just build these huts for people.
People get new huts every year. Do you just have one and then you bust it out once?
Well, they're made from bamboo, so that you just store it somewhere and rebuild it, like those reusable Christmas trees.
But part of the ritual is you have to put it together. Like, that's not, it's like part of the thing. You can't just wheel a hut out. Like, you have to, even if you keep it and store it, you have to take the parts and the lumber and rebuild it again.
This holiday invented by IKEA? What is this shit? Every year you gotta put this shit together? Come on.
There's some lazy Jews, I'm sure, that just wheel a hut out, you know. But I mean, like, the real hardcore Jews, they have to build a hut.
So it's gonna be 5781.
Already, man. Time flies.
I feel like it was just 5770. What's going on?
That's when we started the podcast, isn't it?
I feel like coronavirus started at 5720. That's how long it's been.
So
my plans 5770 means. Can we get those going for the Jewish kids on the internet?
I wonder, like, when Jews, you know, hardcore Jews talk to each other on Facebook, do they go like, oh man, 5780 took another victim today, and it's like Prince died.
First year ever.
Menachem Schneerson, the rabbi, the Mashiach. God, 5780 sucks, man.
Man, 5780 cannot end soon enough. One of the craziest stories to come out of
5780.
Is you heard Chuck mention it at the top of the show, as if America hasn't suffered enough the frontmen of Godsmack and Staind, Sully Erna and Aaron Lewis, respectively, are going to be hitting the road. You know, these millionaires need another paycheck, you know?
Are they millionaires?
For sure.
Rob, you set me up. I thought you were going to say they both got claimed by 2020 and they're both
dead.
No,
not yet.
Well, we don't know. I mean, we know for a fact they earned millions of dollars. We don't know that they are millionaires. They could have blown it all, right?
Fair. That's fair. But I'm going to say they're millionaires.
Okay,
I feel like Aaron Lewis is definitely a millionaire. That guy doesn't seem like he spends a penny of his money.
okay.
Speaking of Rosh Hashanah.
But so the news is that they announced a drive-in acoustic tour. So both of them are going to be, they're going to be both on stage. You could actually go and see Aaron Lewis and fucking Sully Erna in person. They're going to be touring the country, becoming super spreaders of their good vibes.
So are they going to be standing behind people when they don't want their farts to make a sound and just spreading their ass cheeks for them? Like, is that what a super spreader is?
I mean, they might be. I don't know. But I wanted to pull up these tour dates because it's like, you know, it's interesting how they have this laid out. So let me just grab this screen share action. And
are we giving away tickets on the show tonight?
We do have a pair of tickets to give away.
If you want to be a spreader, call 213. Why not?
My initial headline was Godsmack and Staind frontmen announced solo acoustic drive-in tour as if America hasn't suffered enough. But here's the thing. I'm fully aware that Metal Injection is visited by nice people who happen to be Godsmack and Staind fans.
You're one of them, Rob. Come on, stop pretending.
No, I wouldn't call
Staind.
Myself.
Come on.
Love past tense.
Okay.
I'm not a fan anymore. And I only like both of their first albums. Okay.
only both of them. Okay. Just
on each of their first albums.
Only like 20% of their catalog you like.
Well, to your point, yes, I do enjoy some of their previous works. So why insult the fans? So I changed the headline to still have a little humor in it. There's a little behind the scenes, a little talk and shop here. But still point out the sarcasm of how ridiculous it is. So the headline is Godsmack and Staind frontmen announce solo acoustic drive-in tour to end America's suffering.
Thank goodness.
So I just love. So let's read the press quotes. Me and Aaron Lewis on stage together, acoustic. Do I need to say more?
Yes,
Sully Erna.
Yes, you do. Tell me why I should care about that.
Just don't miss it. It may never happen again. Well,
hopefully.
Well, we hope so.
Added Lewis, Sully and I have been friends for 25 years. We've been talking about doing something for the last 10 years. We've been talking about capitalizing on our fan bases for the last 10 years. The time has finally come. I couldn't be more excited to be bringing this to you in such a strange time.
I feel like the time came around 2002.
Yeah. Well, it's past the time. That's why they're doing it, because they can't possibly pull in this kind of money on their own. So here's the routing. And for those of us, livecasters who are listening on audio, I'll read some of it for you. This is their tour, which, you know, they said you can't even say it's a national tour. It's like a Southern Midwest tour. So it starts in Wichita, Kansas, as most good tours do, and then moves through Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Somerset, Wisconsin, Obetz, Ohio. I've never even heard of this town. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. McHenry, Illinois, Independence, Missouri, Biloxi, Mississippi, Daytona, Florida. And now, okay, so you get the idea. But then I looked at all of these asterisks on these routings. So some of these shows, as you can see down here on the key, on the asterisk key, are socially distanced drive-ins up to 4 patrons per vehicle. Some of them are socially distanced pod, up to 4 persons per pod.
You're right.
Just got a little burp. Talking.
Choked up at these two gods of music getting together to do a tour.
Rob's multitasking because he's also ordering tickets to one of these shows on the side. He does
socially distant tickets purchased in quantities of 2, 3, 4, or 5, which already sounds a little sketchy. And then finally, socially distanced tables, up to 8 patrons per table. Now, does this mean that you buy a whole table, or could you be seated with other people at a maximum of 8 per table?
I'm going to hope it's the first thing.
Yeah. And that's at the Mississippi Coast Coliseum lawn.
Oh, it's definitely the second thing then. Never mind.
I don't like why. Why do they need to do this? Like, they don't want the money.
I mean, look, I'm like against like this particular type of concert, but I don't see anything wrong with the way that the shows are put together.
What do you mean?
What's wrong with the shows?
Like, you mean the doing shows at drive-ins?
Yeah, like drive-ins. Like, what's the difference between what other companies are doing?
No, I don't think there's. I just think it's okay. Here's my issue with it. Here it is. I agree. Functionally, there's nothing wrong with it. It's relatively.
It's not like that chili dog show where it's indoors. No one. People are going to be moshing.
100%. But like, this is the type of tour, and this is a very nuanced thing. I understand it's not like, this isn't the end of the world, but like, there is a potential for them to spread disease through all of these. And it's like, why? Why do you need to do this?
Well, the other issue is that there's also going to be Stained and Godsmack fans
like,
there, and they're going to go around like coughing on people to protest masks.
But like, also, you're worried about them spreading disease on tour. Every Godsmack tour that's ever happened has spread herpes all across the country. Never said one thing about it.
That's
all of a sudden, you're
that's
concerned.
Fair. That's fair. I don't know. It's just weird. It's like
Sully Berna.
That's exactly fucking right.
Right.
And that's the episode title as well.
What do you think stain means? when the scab picks off and you got the pus leaking out, stained your drawers.
But I do want to clarify, no, I'm for drive-in shows. I think that's fine. Like the
people staying in their own cars.
Yeah, or their own pods. Like,
it's like the show that the comedy show that I went to was completely safe. Everyone was wearing masks on the line. Everyone was like. Mm-hmm. You know, a safe distance apart waiting. They took temperatures and like all the parties that came together stayed at their own table, but it was like wide enough apart that you weren't spreading germs and it was outdoors. So with all of the research
I guess
that's
the
available.
Big thing. All of these shows are outdoors at least. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, life has to go on. We can't just like stay inside and, you know.
I can.
Well,
I can.
Okay. Not everybody.
It's like,
needs,
yes, life
no
needs
can.
To go on, but like because of this life needs to go on attitude, are we also prolonging the like?
No, if we're doing it responsibly, absolutely. If we're following the science, right? Because the CDC is providing us with some kind of science, I hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we follow the science and we play it safe and we're not indoors and we're not putting people at risk. Like some shows have done, I don't see anything wrong with it. I think we have to, you know, try to live in this like new way.
Yeah, but is everyone that goes to this show going to live according to CDC guidelines, or are they just you're going to gather a bunch of people?
Well, that's
together?
The responsibility of the venue to kick them out if they don't. Just
right.
Like the same thing if someone's at a venue before COVID and they're acting like assholes, the venue has to kick them out.
But if a guy's just acting drunk at a bar, like pre-COVID, it's a lot different from this where you may be killing like 90 people that he comes in contact with. It's a little more serious. So I feel like there's some degree of irresponsibility bringing all these people together. Even if in theory you could say, you know, we're going to handle it correctly and it will be fine, but people don't act according to those guidelines no matter what.
Yeah, that's a good. I would agree with that as well. Like, yes, if everyone followed the guidelines, it would be great. But it feels like, especially in more right wing states, people are much more lax with enforcing any of this stuff.
I don't feel comfortable making a generalization about people. Like, I think if it were me, I would, and I have done my best to act accordingly in respect to others and wear a mask and all of that, so that I can go and enjoy certain things that I miss. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think that there are other people who have that attitude as well.
Certainly are, but I also think then there's a Sturgis rally that infects like 150,000 people.
Okay, but that's not the same thing as what we're talking about.
Why?
It's totally out of control. There was no social distancing. There was no effort to make social distancing.
Right.
So, and also, like, what's the, like, how many people are going to be allowed at the concerts?
I'm sorry, go ahead. I thought you were done.
I'm not sure, like, what the capacity is.
But what I am trying to say by mentioning Sturgis is not that surely other venues will handle it better than Sturgis. Like, that's a failure of both the people and the organizational nature of the event. But what it does show you is that there is a desire of people to gather in the way they gathered at Sturgis, don't have the attitude that they want to take care of each other and themselves. And even if you bring those, like, the general population to an event where it's handled well, you're still going to have people bringing that attitude in. Like, there are people that are just like, I'm fucking over this, man. I've been in my house for 6 months. And in a way, they're right. Like, I want to get the fuck out too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to sit here and quarantine my whole life away. But if it's necessary, it's necessary. Like, that's why I worry about doing these shows to an extent, because I think you're going to bring together people that really don't give a fuck. No matter how much you police it, there will be spreading of it.
Well, on a lighter topic.
Oh, geez. Oh, I thought I was going to be rebutted.
No, I mean,
I think everyone's entitled to their own opinion. Like, we're living in an unprecedented time. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what to make of anything.
Right. For sure.
So in lighter news.
Rob, come closer to the mic.
Lighter news.
Yes, there we go.
I wanted to show this video. I wrote this story specifically so we could talk about it on the podcast.
I love it.
Because first of all, like, just when I saw the photo, the headline is Megadeth's Dave Mustaine blows out the candles for his 59th birthday. And
chef.
The photo, like the thumbnail on the video, saying blowing out candles on a delicious looking Fruity Pebbles cake.
I wish I was still in Metallica.
That was the wish while he was blowing the candles.
Look at Rusev behind him, the chef.
I was gonna say, the comedy to me is how awkward the chef is behind him, who is just like, I just want to go home to my family. I want to say, like, I really hope that the reason they're so close next to each other and unmasked is because they've all been tested, or because Dave Mustaine, it would be in the high risk category. So I hope he's being safe for, you know, his sake and heavy metal.
Way to think of the chef, Rob. Jeez.
Well, the chef looks young enough where he could survive.
Doesn't he? Could...
Although I bet Dave has the better insurance coverage.
How do you know, How do you know? I have a gastroenteritis. I could have dropped it at any time. Who is this old freak? I make him a Fruity Pebbles a cake, and he don't even put on the mask.
Look at this. This cake looks amazing, though.
Was it really Fruity Pebbles? Do you have some info on that? Or
yeah, I mean, look at it.
I mean,
or it just looks like it.
It's unmistakably a Fruity Pebbles cake.
Did
like,
Lars
it's
jump out of it?
It is. That is absolutely Fruity Pebbles. I mean, it's just the outer layer of the cake. It's like sprinkles.
Well, we should let people on to some insider information, which we got from Kyle from The Sword before we went on air, and he saw a link to this story, and he said that Dave Mustaine does love cereal, and he has seen Dave eating Lucky Charms.
Well, could be.
So,
much
got Kyle in so much trouble. The FBI is on his track.
By the way, Sid, I did hear that they paid Lord Littlebrook to dress as Lars and jump out of his tiny cake.
I think Lord Littlebrook might be too tall.
to be Lars, you mean? Or to fit in that cake? Both.
Yeah, well, I'd like to eat my way out of the cake. I'm dressed as Lars.
That cake is very beautiful.
So let's watch this video. It's very short, but
a lot of people think my cake is red. It isn't. Fuchsia.
What is he doing?
Totally off the meter.
I guess we're gonna wrap it up.
Wrap it up. I want to dig into my cake.
Now, I wanted to point out that he says it's supposed to be metal. And now look at this fake laugh that the chef gives. Just like, haha, please don't fire me.
Oh, my God. I have no idea what he just said.
And now he goes, you ready? You ready? And the chef is like, blow the fucking candles out. I don't
give a fuck.
Please
speak in the other direction.
Don't get your dirty, herpy saliva on my cake, all right? People are happy to eat it.
Oh, his dentures are going to come out.
Imagine, it's like a dentures lodged in the cake. Oh, my God. Does he have enough breath to blow out 59 candles?
Oh, it's trick candles.
They got him. You can't do trick candles to a 59-year-old invalid, decrepit person like him.
Also, like, someone who's just recovering from throat cancer. It seems kind of like a harsh rip.
Maybe they just want to get their hands on that Dave Mustaine fortune. And like, yeah, blow them out again, Dad. Go again. Oh, they're still on. Go again. Blow again really hard.
Also, I do want to point out that this is posted by his wife.
Oh.
How did you find that story? Do you follow her?
I do not follow her, but I think I looked at her page and was like, no, I don't need to follow this.
Is she the same wife that birthed his two kids or
yes.
a different wife?
Okay.
Oh, look at that photo.
30 years.
She just looks too young to be like his original wife.
That's right. You know, she's paid a lot of money to look like that.
No, I see that. But even some people, even with, you know, the Botox or whatever, don't look. I feel like she's had successful surgery, unlike some other
people. Yeah, it's very tasteful.
Yeah. You could tell it, but it's not, like, horrible.
Why do we always have to talk about the way that women look?
I'm sorry. I talked about the way Dave Mustaine looked for like 2 weeks. I think this is like
hours talking about how Dave Mustaine looked.
We mapped every craggy line on his face like it was the canals of
Okay, bar. Fair enough. I take it back. I apologize.
Well, here's this other video that she shared where I do think there is some credence to the theory that they might be trying to murder Dave Mustaine.
What?
This is a throwback to the first Tennessee birthday. So Dave Mustaine moved with his family to Tennessee, to Nashville, like a few years ago. Actually, not like 5 or 6 years ago, I think, in order to help his daughter get a career in country music. But anyway, so
how'd that work out?
So here's the video that his wife posted of one of his first birthdays. And he's doing a slip and slide. This is Dave Mustaine on the slip and slide. And now...
Shit.
I personally, like, my heart sank a little bit. Like, oh my, like, he could have busted his neck.
No way. He does martial arts. That's like a front roll. It's cool. He's fine.
Let's watch it again.
Let's see.
All right.
Can you, the original unedited footage of this was like, all right. Log entry September 7th. Attempt number one, unsuccessful. They cut that part out. He went into a jiu-jitsu role. Son of a bitch. His self-preservation skills have been underestimated.
I was sort of hoping he'd just keep rolling down the hill. Like through a highway and just into a ravine.
Next Friday's attempt, poisoned Lucky Charms cake.
I can't kill him. Just can't kill that man.
A man who's been that preserved by various toxins his entire life would be very hard to do away with.
So that was the Dave Mustaine story for the week.
You can't kill me. I'm already dead.
If you enjoy our Dave Mustaine stories, you can get more of them by following us on social media. Follow us on our Facebook. We're on Facebook. Search for Metal Injection Livecast. We're on Twitter. MI Livecast is our handle. We're on Instagram. Metal Injection Livecast is the handle.
Are we going to do a TikTok?
No.
I ain't making any TikToks for this thing, just so you guys know.
Rob's got all these dances he wants to do. Got to give him the space for it.
What if we get a TikTok and let our fans just run it and put whatever they want on there?
I think that would devolve into straight up white power posts very quickly.
It would be like what happened on WWE.
Yeah, exactly right.
I've been using TikTok to, you know, understand the children.
And you can lure them into your car easier.
I haven't been.
Are you also watching Cuties to understand the children?
No,
they're all cuties to him, Noah.
Let's be careful with the sex trafficking humor here, okay? I don't want any QAnon people on us, please. With TikTok, what's interesting is, like, you know, the joke is like, oh, it's just dance videos, but it really is like everything. Like, there's
comedy.
There's finance videos.
There's porn,
like,
on there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, not there's no nudity, but
they don't allow it on the platform.
Right, but there's porn stars on the platform.
That's no. I didn't say is there porn stars. I said is there porn.
What's
very specific.
You don't want to see Natasha Nice brushing her teeth for 6 seconds?
No. I mean, what is she brushing them with?
Vagina.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is, like, there's many uses for TikTok, and like, they're really good at sending you down a rabbit hole, like, based on whatever
happens.
Yeah,
waste all your time.
Wait, I thought you said there was no porn.
But no, we're not starting a TikTok. Sorry, fans. Only fans, though. Yes, we are starting.
Well, Rob, weren't you going to do the cameo videos? Did you ever get on that?
Come on, Rob.
I got a cameo.
Too
shy.
It's a little reveal. We didn't want to get to you, but you let the cat out of the bag. We are moving the show's entire platform to OnlyFans. Like, that'll be the only place to get it.
I'm fine with that.
And much like Bella Hadid, we're charging $500 a month or something like that. No,
is that right?
They've maxed it out now. Like,
go ahead, sorry.
So apparently what it was, yeah, so she joined, and then she made her
I think it was Bella Thorne.
Bella Thorne.
What did I say? Oh,
getting your Bella.
I was gonna ask you, does Bella Hadid have an OnlyFans? That seems like a weird person to have an OnlyFans. What does she put on?
I'm very out of touch. They're all the same to me. So she charged $500. No, she charged.
She made like almost like $1 million or something.
I think it was something. Okay, so I think it was $500 a month, or it might have been $100 a month. And then she said that if you want a nude photo of me, you have to pay me $500 as like a pay-per-view. And then the nude photo was not nude. It was like semi-topless.
Oh.
And so all of these perverts were like, this is false advertising. I want my money back. And they reached out to OnlyFans. And they had all of these chargebacks. And when there's a chargeback, you know, the company like has to pay a penalty. And so they had these thousands of chargebacks, and it completely like exposed the OnlyFans system, essentially. Cause then because of that, no creators could cash out their earnings because they just didn't have available money to give to people because they were refunding so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, they had to change their policies to where now the most you can charge for a pay-per-view is $50. And the interesting thing to me was there were all of these sex workers, these people who provide their services on OnlyFans, that like lashed out at Bella, which one?
Thorne.
By the way, Bella Thorne? I know the name, but I don't know what she's like famous for.
Actress? I don't know. Let's see.
No, I don't know.
But anyway, so they all lashed out at her, like she fucked this up. And like to me, it's like, no, this isn't on her. Like she didn't break the rules.
Well, didn't she offer like nude photos though?
I mean, she lied. Okay, yeah, that I agree. But like everything else, like the charging and all that, I guess if she did provide the nude photos, there would be no chargeback. So in that sense, yes, she is to blame there. But I don't know.
I'm just seeing a bunch of stuff she's been in, and I haven't heard of one thing that it is that's on this list. Oh, boo, a Madea Halloween. That's the only one.
Oh, my goodness.
and Ratchet and Clank as a video game. That's it. That's all I know. Yeah, just a whole bunch of stuff I never heard of.
You've never seen The Babysitter Killer Queen?
Oh, I've seen Stuck on You, the Farrelly Brothers movie, but she must have had a tiny role in that because it was like years and years. She
probably
was like
8 years old at that
point. She was 6 years old, yeah.
I liked her on Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, there, yeah, I missed that. Yeah, I've seen that. Is that the one with David Cross in it?
I would assume so. Is there any other one?
There's two. Sequel? This is Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip. Oh, it's computer animated. Okay, that's fine. Yeah, so she's just an actress in a bunch of shitty stuff that I never heard of. There you have it.
Well, Noah, did you want to...
Oh, my sad news of the week?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my wonderful little boy, Bruno, passed away on Sunday. And he died from cancer. It was just like a really... it was a rough couple of days for me because it was kind of like unexpected. I rushed him to the emergency room on Wednesday and, you know, just he wasn't able to go to the bathroom. Like he wasn't able to pee in the morning. And I was like, this is really weird. And I rushed him to the emergency room and the doctor at the hospital at Verg told me that Bruno has prostate cancer and that it had the tumor grew so much that it was blocking his urethra and that it went over into his bladder. And, you know, I have to just like think of all the good stuff in these last couple of days. And I'm so grateful to have had like pretty much a stranger help me through this. Like just like a very kind person, just being available to me and to Bruno and going above and beyond his job and like helping me with costs and everything like that out of just the goodness of his heart and giving me 3 wonderful days with baby boy who I've had for 11 years and he was 15. And thanks to you guys, Sid, Rob, and Darren for coming to his birthday party / goodbye party on Brighton Beach. And I don't know if anyone who's listening to this had ever had to put a dog down, but just having to go through that on Sunday, I never euthanized a pet. It was a life-changing experience. And I want Bruno's death to help me do something good. So I wanted to let everyone know that I built him that my boyfriend and I, Avi, we built him a website and we're going to raise money to donate to an organization that works with the hospital that we dropped him off in that helps other people who can't afford these expensive medical costs for their pet receive health care.
No. Oh,
so
awesome.
Yeah. So I hope that people who are listening, if you can just go and look and just read what we put together and if it touches you, even if you just like donate $1, like with all the people who listen to this show, if you donate $1, we can raise a lot of money, and keep Bruno's name alive. And the website is inmemoryofbruno.com. And it's just been like such a healing process to work on it after putting him down, you know, just to try to do something good for another stranger, like the way it was done for me. It's just helping me so much. And I would just appreciate if people went and just looked at it. And that's cool. It's, you know, I love him so much. He was so much like a part of my life and it sucks. I'm home for the first time today. So, you know, like being out of our apartment was good, but like, I don't know what tomorrow's going to look like the changes in the routine and all of that. It just it stinks.
How long do you think you're going to wait a while before you get another dog, right?
I'm not ready to even think about another dog. I think, I have to say that for the last 11 years, Bruno's been my number one priority. And everything that I have done was in consideration of him. So I think for the time being, while I'm healing, I just want to do I'm just very, very compelled to do volunteer work for some reason. I think that's the good growth that I've had from this experience. And I think that the next challenge that I'm going to set for myself is I'm going to channel all that care that I would put into Bruno into doing something good for somebody else. And I'm still trying to figure out what exactly that's going to look like. But I know that that's going to be how I'm going to invest my time. And then, it's going to be a while until I get another dog.
Yeah, I have my cat. I had two cats. The second of my two cats passed away on New Year's Eve. And I still haven't been able to get another cat. So I'm I've been debating it. It's time to get one soon, but it's serious. I had that cat for 10 years, a little over 10 years. So it was really hard on me. So it's taken me a while to even consider thinking about getting another pet,
Yeah.
I get it.
It was really nice to see Bruno, I think, on Friday, though. It was was it Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on Friday.
It was the first time the four of us were all together since
the
pandemic.
Since March.
It was the first time I saw a lot of people since the pandemic. It wasn't just you guys. We all kind of met. We all wore masks.
That was the first time I hung out with anyone at all. Since March, outside of my house, just hanging out with anybody.
And we didn't even recognize Darren because he's lost so much weight.
I know.
Really? I feel like I lost a lot of weight, but I feel like I was this weight in March already, though. Really?
No, I think you lost even more weight.
Wow.
Or maybe you look more fit. Because I remember you were saying that you wanted to lose weight and then start working out. So maybe you had lost the weight in your workout. Just
that might be it.
Trim.
That might be it because I feel like I'm at a plateau at number wise where the pounds are, but I have really nothing else to do, so I just I get out. I have the resistance bands and I do shit in my room, but yeah,
that's great. Well,
thank you.
Can I just point out who the big loser in all of this really is?
Who?
It's poor Kyle Shutt. Who's going to go to his Kickstarter to donate money now that Noah dropped his Bruno charity on us? If you've got money to donate to one or the other, Kyle, you're not getting a dime from any of our listeners. He wasted his whole night on our show for nothing.
Or take whatever amount of money you were able to give one of us and then just divide it in half and give to both.
Just think about, what do you care more about? Needy pets getting health care? Or a guy writing a book, just which is more important to you, and then divide it accordingly.
Nobody let Kyle's PR people see this segment of this show, please.
Great guy, though.
Very good.
We need to just have him back to promote on a week when, there's nothing to compete with.
No tragedy.
Yeah.
But Noah's website will still be up at that time.
Yeah, sure. On your next paycheck, then you can.
Yeah. If you're getting a paycheck.
Right.
Well both of us are going to have our websites up. So you can do Bruno first and then Kyle.
But one thing we know, do not donate to Dave Mustaine's Tumble Recovery Fund. We know that's fake. He has a ton of money. Okay?
And he's trained. He knows how to land properly.
Yes,
he doesn't need to recover.
BJJ. He doesn't need. If you see that, it's just another Mustaine scam.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
Plenty of money. He has record sales. He has book sales.
He just uses that money for more cereal cakes. It's all bullshit.
Hey, that guy is in the back laughing at his jokes. It's expensive. You think these guys laugh at his stupid jokes for free?
It's true.
Should cost money.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe you can donate to Sully Erna and Aaron Lewis so that they don't have to tour. They don't have to infect everyone with COVID.
Now I'm really confused where I should put my money.
Unholy Kai in our YouTube chat writes, whoa, I don't listen to the podcast anymore. Jeez, Unholy. But I randomly clicked on the YouTube video tonight. I remember Bruno being the new puppy like 10 years ago. I grew up with Bruno, and I salute him, and I miss him, and I will miss him.
Oh, I love you. Okay, so on the website that we built, we do have a section of it where you can share your favorite memory of Bruno with us. If we get more stuff like that that we can read through the day, like, I would appreciate it so, so much.
It is very,
that
very
you can give me for free.
Very
so please.
Special dog. Sorry, no, I thought you were done. Just wonderful, like, loving. You know, a lot of dogs are annoying, or they just yap constantly or whatever. Like, Bruno is so silent. Like, he would, you know, if Noah would come in and out of the house, he would kind of whine because he loved her so much. But, like, other than that, he was the most peaceful, like, friendly dog. Look up at you, you know. Oh, I see you there. Hey, how you doing? Come scratch my head. Other good thing I used to love about Bruno is you would just scratch him. Then you're done scratching and you got to go do something else. He would nudge your hand back over so that you would have to keep scratching. You could never get away once you start scratching.
You don't want to stop scratching, do you?
It's very, very cute.
But he was also very chill.
Go ahead.
He was very chill. He didn't really make noise. Like, the only noise he would make is he would howl when Noah returned.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was very affected by Bruno's passing. I feel like it's the first animal that I've gotten close to that passed away. And so when Noah kind of told me the news, I was like reading this text message and just bawling and like, just like, contain yourself, Anthony.
Yeah, when I went to the beach with all of you, I felt sad by the email that you sent, but like, I held it together, but when I saw him at the beach, I was, like, really holding back tears because he was very sluggish, you know, and he wasn't himself. He wasn't, you know, he acknowledged everybody, looked up, you know, but he just wasn't, like, Bruno.
He still came over for a pet, though, which I thought
he did.
Yeah, I noticed that he, like, came up to everyone.
Yeah.
Just to get a little pet.
Do you think he knew, like, he was going to pass, or, like, maybe the animals know that on any level?
They do. Yeah.
Maybe he just wanted to just say goodbye like we were doing to him.
I think he was definitely happy with seeing everyone. And, you know, we also took him to his favorite spot in Bay Ridge the next day. And we fed him chicken and ground turkey. We made him we just gave him everything.
What was the spot, like a park or something?
The promenade in Bay Ridge by the pier.
Oh, okay.
And I think that, like, animals don't really give us the same communication that a human would about their pain. And I definitely think that he was in a lot of pain, especially with having to get his bladder drained twice a day. Like, we would drive him to the hospital twice a day. But I don't think he, like, lost his will to live because he was trying so hard to pee. And, like, oh God, I don't even want to say this, but, like, on Sunday, this, like, I almost fainted because the morning that we were taking him to the hospital to get euthanized, he started to pee, like, just like drops started to come out. And we're like, what? Like, we took him out in the morning and then we also left in the mornings. And on the way to the car, all of a sudden these like driblets are coming out of his winky. And we're just like, oh my God, are we doing the wrong thing right now? But ultimately, like, the cancer would spread. He can't fully express his bladder. So we would have to get him to do the catheter. It was so painful. It was just torture. And ultimately, I think we made the right decision. And we definitely made the best use of his final days. And I'm glad that you guys got to see him too. I mean, it's like, it was good for him. Also, it was good for me and Avi. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was good for me too. It would have been a bummer if Papa couldn't say goodbye to him. And that was like, I kept it together the whole time. But then when we parted, like, she started like, they were like, woo, woo. And like, I just couldn't
even. I know. It definitely was like, you know, like, as an adult grieving a loss, like, I think this is like my first death that I've dealt with of like a like a close family member as an adult. And I definitely went through like all the stages of grief. And there was like one point where I felt anger and I was like, did the doctor trick me? Like, is that hospital like trying to kill dogs and like tricking people to like euthanize their, it was like this completely like irrational thought. Cause this doctor was so gentle and like, so like, you know, like went above and beyond what he had to do for us that it like made no sense.
Isn't it Dr. James Hetfield?
Oh, no.
He kicked my dog. He kicked my dog and told me it was cancer.
And when he, like, first told me, so, you know, like, in a pandemic, you can't go inside the hospital. You have to wait outside. So he called me, and he's like, I'm so sorry to have to tell you this, and I'm so sorry it's under these circumstances, but Bruno has cancer, and I'm so sorry. And he just kept applauding. I'm like, okay, fine. Bruno has cancer. Like, we're going to get it treated. It's fine. Like, just give me the pills, whatever. We'll take him home. It didn't like really fully hit me until I got home and I was like, oh no, you know, like I was crying about the cancer. Then when he wasn't able to urinate the next morning, that's when I was like the worst. That's when I understood what was about to happen. And I was a complete wreck. I don't know. Like, I still feel like it's a dream. Like, I feel like Bruno's just like, you know, because he's so quiet. I feel like he's just like in his bed sleeping right now. It sucks. So if anyone has stories to share, like, it would help me so much to hear them. And just please reach out to me because it helps me so much just to get through it. And I don't know how tomorrow's going to look, but I think I'm pretty much holding it together well today.
Yeah, you're doing great.
Thank you.
You've been doing pretty well. You've been doing pretty well throughout the whole thing, I think, all things considered.
Never thought I'd say this, but I'm going to miss never getting to smell his fart again. Like, that was such a distinct Bruno thing that...
You know, I fixed his diet, and like towards the end, he wasn't farting as much.
Sid, why don't you just get some doggy treats and eat them and produce the same aroma?
I've tried. It's not the same.
Just eat the Merrick food. Merrick dog food.
Oh, I thought you just food you get in Merrick, Long Island. Does that to you.
They are known for their farty food there.
I have yet to experience a babka fart. I haven't. I guess she's too young.
Fucking humble brag. Poor me.
She has a good stomach. That's good.
Yeah. Well,
young dog, don't fart.
You were very generous with Bruno's food during the meetup, and since then her her poos have been very inconsistent.
Sorry.
No, I mean it was my fault. I should have pulled her away. She was very into Bruno's food.
No, it's okay. So, like, for the people who don't have video, Rob has the photo behind him. We gave Bruno his birthday meal of like ground chicken and carrots and brown rice, and Babka was very, very curious, and we had to give her some of her own. So both of them were sharing the meal. It was so cute.
He's very cute to me. Went and sniffed around a little, and she gave him some kisses.
I know, dogs are so sweet. All animals are sweet.
Well, not all.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Some very shitty
angels.
But I will say having a dog has made me empathetic to all animals, I feel.
Rob, you're not pathetic. Don't say that about you.
Empathetic, come on.
You are not.
I had a mouse in my apartment. And I used a glue trap, and I will never, ever use a glue trap again because it was the most traumatic thing, finding a live mouse stuck to a glue trap.
Did you feed it to Babka?
No. So what you're supposed to do is you're supposed
stomp
to put,
on them, right? With your boot?
No. You're supposed to put not baby oil, virgin olive oil.
That's what you do to yourself. What do you do to the mouse?
Or like
that's
vegetable oil,
film,
any sort of oil.
Shoot like a calendar.
The oil like, undoes the stickiness. So like,
oh.
So I went outside. I'm like, with like a teaspoon, like pour oil on his poor mouth. And then like, I was like, go. And then I had to like pull it off the glue, and it was freaking out, and it would like get back on the glue. And it's like, no, I'm trying to free you, you idiot.
Rob, I have humane traps. You should ask me next time. I have these traps, like a long tube, and the mouse runs in, and it's got a spring-loaded thing. It works really well, and you take it outside, and you free the mouse.
Like a fleshlight that you just trap a mouse in for?
It does. It kind of looks like a fleshlight.
They totally look like a pocket pussy that you fuck, for sure. Because I went and I looked, but I got like these, I don't know if they work. I'll keep you guys posted, but they're like these sound emitters. You just plug them in and it emits like some sound that's supposed to scare away the mice.
I heard some debate about that, whether some people say it's humane, and in other ones they say like it has an adverse effect on them psychologically, like they hear it and they go crazy or something. But I don't know. I'm not taking a position. But
at least I'm not killing it or making it, you know.
Yeah, you could just pay its therapy bills after hears
like,
that sound.
Look, you know, ultimately it's invading my space. So get the fuck out.
I don't want, with roaches and stuff, I don't like to kill anything, okay? I don't even really like to kill flies. If it's something like a roach that's spreading disease to my food and everything, I would kill it, but regretfully.
Roaches, I have no qualms.
Right.
Killing or flushing or what have you.
But mice are very, go ahead, sorry.
But mice, what were you going to say about mice?
Mice are very smart animals. They're like supposedly like the top five smartest animals on the planet. So
that's
like,
smart enough to be in a glue beautiful trap.
There are physical limitations, but they're very conscious, you know, and they have serious emotions. And like when they're on the glue trap, you basically frozen them. They're like trapped, like kind of like torture.
Well, that's why they use them for so many like psychological experiments.
Mice or glue traps?
Mice.
Oh.
Both. Yeah.
Well, this has been a psychological experiment, and if you made it to the end, you've passed. Congratulations.
Bravo.
If you made it to the end, you love great comedy and fun. Congratulations.
But now, we got to leave.
Now, we're going to put you in a glue trap.
And stretch your balls.
Oh. Have you ever done that, Rob? Dip your nuts onto a glue trap?
I've got my foot caught in those glue traps, and it is the worst. It's disgusting. It's impossible to
barefoot, you know, or like with a shoe.
Barefoot.
Oh,
How'd you do that? Just want to look at where you're walking.
Yeah, accidentally. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or like it was when I lived with my parents, but it was kind of like by the wall where my desk was. So just I had to avoid it with my feet when I was sitting. And
I know what it was. You're making this up. What it was someone kept stealing all the holojets overnight. Your parents were like, I don't know if it's a mouse or someone's breaking in. We're setting glue traps in front of the fridge, and they fucking caught you.
You caught me so bad, Sid. You just know me too well.
Yeah. His grandmother wasn't letting him get the fresh holojets.
They beat the shit out of you with a broom.
That's enough of that. But before we get out of here, first of all, we do want to thank you for shooting in.
Make the music lower, Rob. I can't hear you.
We want to thank you for tuning in.
Good.
And we want to thank our top livecast fans of the week. And if you want to be a top livecast fan of the week, you can do so by giving us $10 a month, please, at patreon.com/metalinjectionlivecast. So here are our top five fans of the week, who I will read in my best Bruno imitation. Ready?
Aww.
Number one. Number two. Number three.
Wait, what?
This bit isn't working.
Yeah.
No, let's start over.
Okay, let me
just
start
do it
over.
In Rob's voice.
Let me do it as Bruno. Ready? Woof. Woof, woof, woof. Woof, 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 woof.
Oh.
Okay. Here.
Wait, what was the last one again?
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Okay, but seriously, thank you, Eric. Thank you, Rabba Ganoush, a.k.a. Justin. Thank you to Benjamin, El Duderino, Dan R., Cattle Decaf,
Mindy May is Kippa, Croc Destroyer, Sam I Am I Is, Jander, Shasur Shasusitz, LaCroix, The Crustacean Sensation, aka God Stomper, Ash Boz Hillon.
Yeah.
Dallas.
Okay.
Raba Vampiro. 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 Shane. Hugo likes tacos. Here goes. And hi, guys. It's Josh.
Very nice.
Well done.
Also, that was a bitchin' solo on this Hulk Hogan track as we get out of here.
He's a great guitar player.
He was in Metallica once. Man.
Yeah.
All right, we're out of here, folks. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Take this long till I see you guys again. Get to see, get to say, sayonara.
All right, that was great. Okay, I'll send it in a bit.
Wait, should we try to see if Darren logs out? Do you want to see if your mic works or no?
I'll just do it and let you know later.
Okay.
Quick question, Noah. Do you think you'd be, if we wanted to do like the Bill and Ted roundtable this weekend, would you be up for that or no?
No, this weekend I cannot do it, but I'm around all of the following weekend. Like if you want to do it like on Saturday, one thing, and then Sunday, the other thing.
So that would be
the 26th and like the 27th, we have something already planned, but if you want to do something the 26th.
What's the 27th?
That was Cannibal Holocaust.
Do we want to just knock out, do we want to not do two in a row? Is that what's going on?
Well, we were going to do Bill and Ted and the other thing, right? The watch along?
Well, yeah, because Bill and Ted was a round table and the other two are watch alongs.
Okay. I'm okay with a marathon, honestly. I enjoy your company, but if that's too much for you, that's okay too. I like doing it all.
We could also, I mean, the round table is only going to be like half an hour. Maybe, is there a weeknight? We could do it sooner so we could release it in September.
Oh, for September.
Because we just watch the movie on our own and then talk about it for half an hour and post it up right away.
I don't know.
Take a day to think about it. We could reconvene tomorrow or Thursday and see what's what.
Ted, if you want to do something like to just get something out, we can do like maybe something else that like we've always talked about. Like we could do a sports or a wrestling thing and then wouldn't be so, you know, all-inclusive of everything. It would be something that we could bang out that way. And we can give, we can give Noah a break, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, really, we don't have to do a mid-September thing at all. It's just because the other two things are like October Halloween themed. So then I worry that Bill and Ted is pushed into November.
That's
like, do people still care by then? I guess they will. More people will have had a chance to see it by then.
I always think these things are more about our charm and personality and what we say about them than what the actual Cannibal Holocaust came out like 40 years
ago. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so then we'll do Bill and Ted when we have time, and then we'll do the two watch alongs last weekend of September.
I mean, the closer we get it to the release, I guess that's better, but I don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't think people are going to subscribe or unsubscribe.
Yeah, either two on the 27th or one on the 26th, one on the 27th. We have 2 weeks to figure that out.
Okay, yeah, I guess, then on the 2 at a time, that's fine by me, unless it's like too much to watch two movies in a row. I'm fine. Like that whole week, I'm not doing anything, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Talk to you guys later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.